This is the second hour of Spingola Speaks. I am Deanna Spingola, and my guest today is Veronica Clark, the author of Werewolves of the Iron Cross, a new look at Hitler's armed forces, which came out earlier this year, and Black Nazis, a study of racial ambivalence in Nazi Germany's military establishment. She is also the translator and editor of Werewolves of the Iron Cross, The Hyenas of High Finance, which is a fabulous, fabulous book. And she has a new book coming out soon, which is entitled The Union Jackal with Wolf Hank. And I'm looking really forward to seeing that book. I have all of your books.
Oh, great. So you're learning the truth. That's good.
I am. I have a lot of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I have 7 books to
get. Great. Yeah, I'm disappointed that I've still seen some new revisionist books coming out that tout the same, that the Nazis were ultra supremacists. They did everything except they didn't do the Holocaust. That's kind of a new revisionist line. And I'm going, okay.
Ridiculous.
We're trying to work on all the pillars, but apparently not all of them are getting out yet. Yes.
Well, so, with your efforts, I'm certain that eventually we will all know the truth.
Yeah, and it takes years. Look at how long it took the revisionists. They started with Paul Rosnier in, was that the early 60s? And it's only now that it's really going mainstream. So, yeah, it takes a long time.
Right.
So Streit, continuing on, he erroneously argued that a worldwide union with Britain at all would prevent such crashes from ever reoccurring. So somehow this union was going to prevent any kind of banker-orchestrated crashes, which is absurd, get rid of speculation and get rid of finance capitalism and making money from money and the insanity that goes along with that whole shadow money system, hedge funds, blah, 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 and you won't have crashes like this. Again, this is nonsense. Unifying all these big countries is only going to complicate economics even more. He also argues that Hitler, for some unknown reason, he must have been dumb and insane, diverted his attack against Britain to France. Okay, well, we already know that France was Hitler's enemy number one in his view because of World War One, and this wasn't just Hitler's idea. Most of the generals agreed France has to be taken care of, and we can't forget that France and Britain both declared war on Germany, so Germany had every right to go after France. Britain was a totally different matter. We've already gone over the difficulty of crossing the channel, of making an invasion like that against a waterbound nation that had the most powerful navy in the world still at the time, and the expense involved, that Hitler really couldn't afford this. And again, it's so important that people read that Koch essay, which will be summarized completely, like almost paragraph by paragraph, in the Union Jackal, to understand the evolution from Sea Lion to Barbarossa. So Hitler really never put the invasion of Britain on, like, as the first thing on the table. It was always kind of, no, we got to wait. The timing has to be right. It's too soon. The conditions aren't right. And unless you're familiar with that and the intricacies involved, one is not going to understand why it didn't happen and why, you know, the whole Dunkirk thing happened the way it did. So we've already been over that. And that's what Mars and Condit get totally bungled.
Oh, yeah. And all they
yeah,
have to
they
do
don't,
is
they're not
read
familiar
some of the
with
books.
All the facts. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're not familiar with all the facts. They haven't read all of the essays. They don't understand the evolution of the Barbarossa plan. This is going to strike everyone as probably stunning. Hitler never intended to attack the USSR. Never. Forget Mein Kampf. And it's totally debunked. And Viktor Suvorov just made it that much more, you know, solid, as far as it wasn't going to happen until Stalin violated the pact.
We do have to take a break. We'll be right back.
Heart-related health problems affect millions of people each year. Maybe you're one of the many who suffer from issues related to angina pain, high blood pressure, congestive heart failure, unbalanced cholesterol, irregular heartbeat, or clogged arteries. There is a solution that doesn't involve expensive prescription drugs that only mask the problem and leave you with horrible side effects. If you are ready to live your life free of sickness, pain, and fear, live your life with increased vitality, energy, and youthfulness, and experience your body healing itself, then you're ready for Heart and Body Extract from Healthy Hearts Club. Heart and Body Extract has a 23-year proven track record of using certified organic herbs that make up an excellent formula to balance and support the heart and circulatory system. In as little as 2 weeks, you can feel amazing results when your 2-month supply of Heart and Body Extract today. Call 1-866-295-5305 or go to hbextract.com.
Are you still paying your credit cards and so-called bank loans thinking that you owe the money? Do you feel like it's your moral obligation but can't see an end in sight? Well, what if I told you that in truth, you don't owe a single penny and that the banks know this and hope you don't find out? Here's where we come in. Free2Prosper.com specializes in a profound debt repudiation method which challenges the validity of your so-called debts, morally frees you from the burdens, and protects your property. Our system is often superior to settlement, bankruptcy, or consolidation, which often leave you in a worse situation. If you feel the moral obligation to take care of yourself and your family, then I urge you to consider taking action right now. The economy will not wait. If you want to know more so you can prosper through the economic collapse, all while staying honorable and true to yourself, then call 877-417-8393. That's 877-417-8393. Or visit free2prosper.com right now.
Help, I've fallen and I can't get up. If you have an elderly loved one, please listen. Whether it's fire danger, a serious fall, or other type of home emergency, Life Alert is there for you. The company with the slogan, Help, I've Fallen and I Can't Get Up, protects 60,000 members.
The first time I fell in that bedroom and I couldn't reach the phone.
When you have a heart attack like I did and there's no one there, Life Alert was there for me.
Having a secure feeling through Life Alert is ideal.
My independence is possible because of it.
Listen to former U.S. Surgeon General Dr. C. Everett Koop.
Thanks to Life Alert, you can live alone without ever being alone. That's why I wear one.
With Life Alert protection, elderly people can often postpone going to a nursing home for several years. For a free brochure about Life Alert service, call now 1-800-410-0739. 1-800-410-0739. Call Life Alert now for your free brochure, 1-800-410-0739.
Today is Veronica Clark. Alrighty, we were talking about some of the logistics involved with Germany attacking Britain, and certainly it was just not inappropriate for them to do that.
And Hitler was so, like, he just couldn't bring himself to do it because of those issues. He knew that if he got caught up in Britain and things didn't go right, Stalin was next door. And he could easily take advantage of that and grab all of not only Eastern Europe, but start encroaching on Prussia and Germany and the Czech Republic. So I guess people like Condit Mars don't understand that catch-22 there. And unless we're in a war and we're actually the ones making the decision, it's so easy to say, well, in retrospect, you know, I would have done this and Hitler was stupid and blah, blah, blah. We're not there. We're not the ones making the decision with hundreds of thousands of lives. So that's another thing. And, of course, General Halder was actually the one who eyeballed the Soviets and said, excuse me, Hitler, this guy is not only violating the pact and grabbing swaths of Eastern Europe that are in our sphere and that we agreed to, that were in our sphere, that he signed to, but he's getting more and more aggressive and amassing huge numbers of troops. And Hitler kept calm all the way until November, December 1940, 6 months before the actual plan was drafted. So no one can possibly argue that he was bent on invasion of the Soviet Union before that time. It just wasn't there. They are inventing the evidence. And as a matter of fact, Koch discovered that Gerhard Weinberg, who's the one that argues Hitler had plans for world domination and that it all goes back to Mein Kampf, fudged the evidence, wrote against his sources, and even changed some of the translations to mean a different thing than what Hitler originally meant. Changed the words to tweak the entire meaning of what he said. And this is a point-by-point critique. So, you know, right there, we've undermined that whole thing. So what evil thing did Hitler do? How was he responsible for World War II? That whole thing falls to pieces. And that's really what Condit and Mars and some of these other people, that is the assumption they're all operating under, that Hitler was solely responsible for this, that he founded Israel, and all these silly things. So back to Sea Lion, we do know that Hitler later pondered a joint operation with the IRA and that the IRA did receive National Socialist support, but this plan was found out by the British, and so it was completely scrapped. And the thing is the IRA never had a formidable force. I mean, the Nazis kind of looked at it and went, this is a joke. This is never going to fly. We're going to have to carry this if we do it. So I don't think they ever took it really seriously. It was only in the stage where you drop a few agents and get contact. That's as far as that got. And then Streit was an English supremacist like Kennedy. He said, and this is incredible, that English speech is free speech. Not Kiswahili, not German, not anything else. No, English speech is free speech. That is the speech and the language of freedom. He then goes on to attribute fake quotes to Hitler, such as, "Du bist nichts, das Volk ist alles," and then obviously gives no citation as to when and where this was said. And it literally means, you are nothing. The people is everything. Or the nation is everything. Like Hitler was really telling someone in his speech, you're nothing. I knew that was fake right off the bat, but here's the real kicker. He uses du, which is the familiar you. Hitler never, ever, ever would have used du in a speech. It would have been sie, which is formal you. So right there, it's just, I'm sure he got that from Rauschning, mm-hmm. who's been completely debunked and whom Mars cites. Rauschning was a liar. He met Hitler on 5 occasions and always in the presence of others. His alleged testimony, Hitler speaks in the voice of destruction, was never corroborated by anyone and has been debunked not only by H.W. Koch, but a Swiss historian as well, in the essays on IHR. Interestingly, Streit boasts about how England proposed to solve the Palestine problem by dividing even those few acres into separate Arabic and Jewish states. So what ultimately happened is the British, because they were in control of Palestine and it was mandate, they decided, okay, well, we'll divide this country. We're really the ones in control of it. So the United States inherited a British problem, and Hitler had nothing to do with the founding of Israel, as argued by Cardell and Condit.
Absolutely.
It's so silly. Hitler only sent 60,000 Jews to Palestine. Okay, that's it. In fact, he wanted them to go, as we know, originally to Madagascar, but the French bungled that and said, no way, you can't use any of our colonies, no way. And I mean, even Poland was on board with that plan. So this was a European collaborative solution to the Jewish problem as they saw it. And because Palestine was the only place where they could work out the whole bank account thing and the transfer, that's where they ended up going. 30,000 went to Shanghai. So are we going to say that Hitler founded Jewish Shanghai? I mean, it's so absurd. It really is so absurd. And far more went to the United States.
Exactly. So, many of them went to New York.
Right, exactly. So, no, he didn't found Israel. The British founded Israel. It goes back to Lord Balfour. They were in control of it. And Truman, not Hitler, formally recognized the state. So, you know, we can get off that little tangent right now. It's just, it's silly. And it's just another excuse that Europeans have for a problem that they can't deal with. And even the Germans realized the complexity of the Palestinian problem. And they were like, you know, if Jews do end up there, it's going to be a world problem. They knew it was coming, so they didn't want to create, they didn't want to make it any worse than it was. But at the same time, Hitler was like, I want to get rid of these Jews. And here's the other thing.
That was his extermination program.
Right.
Just deporting them.
Right. And what ended up happening, as we know, is as the East opened up and he saw Stalin's true intent and was going to have space to relocate them there, which even Stalin was doing, he was also a Zionist and wanted them relocated to this place. I don't know the formal name of it, but Stalin actually made a little city.
Oh, Birbichan.
Yes, exactly.
Birbichan. And that was formalized, I think, in 1932.
And as a matter of fact, there's a lot of Israelis going there right now because they don't like Israel. So we can get over this notion that, you know, Hitler was going to do a horrible thing to them and put them in this a Siberian gulag. No. That's not true at all. He wanted them. In fact, he sent teams to Madagascar and whatnot to make sure it was habitable and that could actually support a people of that, you know, of that population mass. So, you know, this flies in the face of all we think we know.
Sure. They also bought a big piece of property in Argentina and had kind of some colonies there. So, I mean, there were a lot of places they could have gone.
Exactly. And ultimately what happened is they had to be interned as the war progressed, mostly for their own protection. The camps were safer than anywhere outside, and none of the camps were bombed. Which a lot of these researchers say, oh, that's it. Because none of those camps were bombed, Hitler put those Jews in there to protect them and killed all the Germans and the Christian Europeans. No, they were in a war. He knew how touchy it was to, you know, deal with the Jewish people given their power, and he had to be very careful how he played his cards with those people. And he was obligated to protect them as internees in a situation of war, as fifth columnists in a situation of war, however he saw them. So that's just another silly argument that has no evidence. There's no quotes or any evidence whatsoever from any Nazis saying we need to protect Jews, so put them in the camp. I mean, really? And a lot of them did die. Thousands did die as a result of typhus and other things. So to say that none of them died and they didn't suffer in those camps, it wasn't exactly paradise. So that's another thing that Condit, you know, is, I guess, unwilling to see. Streit does offer some valuable insight into the Dunkirk issue. So we're going to include that in the Union Jackal. And, you know, of course, he didn't know that Hitler was, you know, at that point concerned about the USSR. And that's why he put off Sea Lion and was, you know, a little sketchy at Dunkirk. So, but it's good insight that will add more to our understanding of what happened. He goes on to question, though, why in the world the U.S. couldn't lead Canadians, Irish, British, South Africans, Australians, New Zealanders into a United States of the world when U.S. liberal democracy was so overwhelmingly good and appealing. Who in their right mind could reject it? He actually proposes this. He's going, who could possibly say no to this led by the U.S.? And so this was going to be dominated by America. And I'm thinking, okay, that's interesting. Basically, the whole world would operate on American principles.
Which they kind of do, to a certain extent.
Absolutely. So really and truly, this guy's plan came to pass. Yeah. He whipped up plenty of nonsense mongering when he posed the questions, what about Canada? You wouldn't willingly let Hitler be New York's neighbor on the north, would you? How would you defend Canada? This is a question he poses to Americans. As though Hitler is going to be in Canada.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
All righty, we do have to take a 3-minute break, and we'll be right back with Veronica Clark after a word from our sponsors. So stay tuned.
Thank you. purification systems have long been recognized as the world's ultimate in water purification. Berkey's are used worldwide under normal, hostile, and emergency environments. Securing your access to good-tasting, sparkling, wholesome drinking water can be harder than you might expect. Water is often laced with chlorine, lead, high levels of harmful bacteria, and other unwanted chemicals and contaminants. Even bottled water can contain these contaminants, and moreover, it's expensive. Other purification systems are inferior. Most do remove pathogenic bacteria, and many remove the beneficial minerals that your body needs. Perhaps that's why Berkey systems have long been recognized as the world's ultimate in water purification. This simple, highly effective method of microporous, self-sterilizing, and recleanable black Berkey purification elements bring you the finest water purification system available anywhere. Call today, 1-800-724-2719. That's 1-800-724-2719. Or go to our online store, republicbroadcasting.org. Free shipping for a limited time only.
If you're the mother of a child with behavior problems, I'd like to talk to you. My name is Janet Lehman. I'm a behavioral therapist and a mom. I know what it's like when the child you love becomes a defiant, out-of-control child who disrespects you. That's why my husband James and I created the Total Transformation, the program that tens of thousands of moms are now using to turn around their child's behavior. If you've heard about the Total Transformation and wondered if it will work for you, now you can try it for free. I'm willing to give away 1,000 programs today for free. All you need to do is get the program and let us know how it works for you. We'll let you keep it for free. I know the Total Transformation works because I used these techniques with my own son and with troubled kids for over 30 years. Let me prove to you that it works by giving you the program for free.
Call now, 1-800-583-1093, 1-800-583-1093. That's 1-800-583-1093.
Did you know that the water you're drinking may contain over 2,000 different contaminants? From hormone-disrupting and mind-altering chemicals like fluoride in pharmaceuticals to newly emerging contaminants like radiation and other hybrid chemicals that water treatment plants don't screen out of our drinking water. PureEffectFilters.com has a breakthrough filter solution to effectively reduce the widest range of such contaminants, including the radiation coming from the Fukushima disaster. In addition, the filters will also revitalize your water by releasing natural minerals and electrolytes while increasing pH and antioxidant levels. Safeguard and revitalize your drinking water today with a breakthrough Pure Effect water filter system. Visit PureEffectFilters.com to learn more or contact us today at 1-888-891-4821. That's 1-888-891-4821. Call now and take one of the most important steps you'll take to a healthier future.
And we are back. Welcome back. Our guest today is Veronica Clark, and we need to clarify that you are talking about Jim Mars and not Tex Mars. They're not related
Correct.
At all. But, yeah, we want to make sure that our listeners know we're talking about Jim Mars.
Right. Okay, so, yeah, again, this sort of idiocy that still holds sway over the so-called panangles today, why does it? I don't really know. Somehow we are prone, as a culture and people, that is people with this British descent, to this idiotic propaganda. And maybe it traces to insecurity. Somehow maybe these island people felt insecure, whatever the case is, but it seems to me to be at root an insecurity thing that makes us constantly want to lash out and support these crazy wars based on this propaganda that's so easily debunked and exposed as inane.
Well, you know, I think people like to feel exclusive, and we like to feel that we're special and special people, and that's really kind of Talmudic if you really look at the basis of it.
Right. And that could be, especially given the Puritan basis,
yes,
because they believe they were the chosen race. So, yeah, that's certainly possible. And, of course, that's what Springborn really is, the one who gets into that one of his chapters called The Chosen People. So this Streit similarly argued that if Americans allowed autocracy and dictatorship, if you will, to prevail in Europe, then the U.S. would undoubtedly be destroyed from within. What, by a Nazi fifth column that didn't exist? I mean,
or
if democracy,
communist?
Yeah, if democracy is so powerful and so inherently strong, as he says, then why is it going to just fall to pieces with one fifth column from, you know, a national socialist country that wasn't even there in the first place? It's silly. It's like you're admitting that your system is garbage if it's going to fall that quickly. It's just stupid. He proposed that Britain join the U.S.-led Union of the Free, is what he called it, as opposed to the U.S. joining the British Commonwealth of Nations system as the basis for our world government. So there we have our one world government and our new world order. It certainly wasn't Nazi, as Jim Mars has proposed. And, of course, it was Panangle, not NS German. And we also have basically America's global agenda and Britain's founding of Palestine as a Jewish state here in this book. So basically Jim Mars and this Henneke Cardell, whatever his real name is, have some explaining to do.
Right.
Yeah. And this then leads us to the Savage Wars of Peace. And again, you see the same thing. And Boot is a neocon. He believes the United States should rule the world and we should be very bold about it. He says, if you need to blow them up, you do it. You know you're right kind of a thing. And it's just, his conclusion is stunning. It really is. Boot argues that the U.S. replaced Britain as the Globocop. Absolutely true. The torch passed. And he describes several of America's small wars. We're only going to touch on a few. Foreign trespasses, full-scale invasions, as well as early American imperialism. Here's a list of some of the wars he covers. First of all, America's naval wars against the Barbary states, and this is namely Tripoli, from 1801 to 1805 and again in 1815. These wars were undeclared by Jefferson, aggressive, not defensive, were kept secret from Congress, included false flag deception and bribery. We used to stick a British flag on our ships and then pull it down at the last second and start blowing up our enemy. And achieved absolutely nothing other than needless death and lost taxpayer dollars. We ended up paying the premium you had to pay to trade with Tripoli anyway. So it was totally useless. I believe this is, I'm not sure how this island is pronounced, the Marquesas.
It's so easy to read, but when you have to say stuff that loud, it's a little
It's
hard.
A Spanish word, I'm pretty sure. Marquesas, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know.
In 1813 and then China in 1859, that's when we first got involved in China. And that went on for a long time. We never left. The Americans not only brought the Marquesian Islanders venereal diseases, but laid waste to several of their villages with scorched earth policy. For what reason? So that America could have a naval base there to expand her market sphere. We needed a station for, I believe it was recoaling for the Navy or whatever.
Right.
The Americans clashed with locals in Fiji, Samoa, and the Drummond's Island, burning a number of villages, killing dozens of natives. Further killings and burnings occurred in Sumatra. And America, always willing to assist Britain, participated in the Arrow War against China. So that was about the time when the American British navies policed the globe together. We started noticing the pattern. The U.S. invaded Korea in 1871 and Samoa in 1899. The Americans entered interior waters without permission in Korea, kidnapped a Korean official, and then fired into a crowd on the shore. But they were peaceable. The Americans right. denounced the Koreans as a land of 10 million savages and then killed some 300 Korean defenders. So they weren't even allowed to defend their own internal waterway and were denounced as savages for so doing. After the Americans' victory, the Americans demanded a trade treaty, but unlike Japan, the Koreans ignored them and they basically had no choice but to leave. So what was the point?
All righty. We do have to take a break. We will be right back in 3 minutes with our guest, Veronica Clark.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Are you still paying your credit cards and so-called bank loans thinking that you owe the money? Do you feel like it's your moral obligation but can't see an end in sight? Well, what if I told you that in truth, you don't owe a single penny? And that the banks know this and hope you don't find out. Here's where we come in. Free2Prosper.com specializes in a profound debt repudiation method which challenges the validity of your so-called debts, morally frees you from the burdens, and protects your property. Our system is often superior to settlement, bankruptcy, or consolidation, which often leave you in a worse situation. If you feel the moral obligation to take care of yourself and your family, then I urge you to consider taking action right now. The economy will not wait. If you want to know more so you can prosper through the economic collapse, all while staying honorable and true to yourself, then call 877-417-8393. That's 877-417-8393. Or visit free2prosper.com right now.
Attention RBN listeners, the freeze-dry guy, providing the finest in long-term storage food since 1970. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. In actual scientific tests, these foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. These foods are delicious tasting, hearty, light to carry, and easy to prepare under the most adverse conditions. Unfortunately, many people building a family food storage program, as well as many companies providing emergency feeding programs, simply do not give you enough protein, especially animal protein. No other food satisfies like animal protein during stressful times. If you're a meat eater, you will definitely want our freeze-dried meats and entrees. But we do offer vegetarian items as well. Visit freezedryguide.com or call 866-404-FOOD. 866-404-3663. Freeze-dry guy, the best you can buy.
Guest today, Veronica Clark. And Max Boot is really something else. Now, he belongs to the Council on Foreign Relations. He belongs to PNAC. And in the Weekly Standard, right after the attacks of 9/11, he urged the U.S. to, and I quote, to embrace its imperial role as the most realistic response to the attacks.
Exactly.
He graduated from Yale. And he claimed that 9/11 was due to, and I quote, insufficient American involvement and ambition.
Wow. he's incredible. And I mean, he is really quite honest about how awful the United States was against these other peoples and stuff. So it's like, we're talking about a man really who lacks a conscience.
Yes.
I mean, to just go around savagely blowing these people up and subordinating them, I don't get it.
That's
apparently our role.
It is amazing.
It is
amazing. I don't get it either.
Yeah, and yeah, he says that exact thing in his concluding chapter, that we need to fulfill our role. It's crazy. So, okay, so after this Korean adventure, in 1899, the U.S. got involved in Samoa on England's side to push Germany out of Samoa. And dozens of Samoans died in this conflict. And Germany was expelled by a New Zealand expedition, of all things. So we're seeing how the Pan Angles came together and worked as a unified unit, because New Zealand was another basically British country. The U.S. helped kill, loot, rape, and pillage in China during the Boxer Uprising in 1900. our troops, to their credit, were the best behaved. In fact, the Russians and the Germans were the worst violators at that time. So, but Smedley Butler was in there, and we'll talk about him a little bit in a minute. But he acted like he was Mr. Peace and war is a racket, blah, blah, blah. He spent his entire life as a Marine killing people, though, however. So that's quite convenient of him to decide that he was against war after the fact. The U.S. also lied about Chinese terror and savagery in its newspapers. And on page 70 in Boot's book, I won't read it, but people can literally read one of the original news stories talking about the Chinese, like, hacking people up, raping, pillaging, acting like absolute animals. The whole thing was invented, and our press finally had to admit it. But, of course, the damage was already done. The Philippine War from 1899 to 1902, I mean, this is long before the Nazis ever come on the scene. You know, here's America acting genocidal, test human experimentation. We did vaccine experimentations in the Philippines and also against Guatemalans by the thousands. So apparently
we're waterboarding the Filipinos.
Yes, yes. And so Mars overlooks this. He doesn't acknowledge that the U.S. was experimenting on these non-whites for a long time before any kind of World War II experimentation went on. And we were doing our own experimenting way before paperclip, way before. So Americans routinely burned villages and crops. They rejected a Filipino Declaration of Independence modeled on America's own, just like Ho Chi Minh's, denounced them as quote-unquote niggers, shot escaping prisoners, established concentration camps, which became death camps because of the disease, tortured POWs with the water cures, what they called it back then, censored the press and killed Filipinos as young as 10 because they were insurgents. Officially, 11,000 died in U.S. camps. 300,000 were forcibly interned and deported into, you know, into these internal camps. So that's forced migration. And 216,000 Filipinos, at least, this is official, were killed, compared to just 4,200 white Americans. And our leaders called it, some of our leaders, a splendid little war. That is exactly what Winston Churchill called World War II, his splendid
wow.
little war. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. And then that's- going on, America invaded Cuba, Panama, Nicaragua, and Mexico from the years 1898 to 1914. We're talking about 16 years of continuous warfare before World War I. And Germany was our enemy back then as well. The U.S. enacted a 19-year occupation of Haiti from 1915 to 1934. And the U.S. went to war against the Dominican Republic and occupied it from 1916 to 1924. So America's war in Haiti, that included indiscriminate killing, forced labor. They actually had slavery where they chained them together. And massacres such as the Les Galles massacre. But Boot goes, because it was a small massacre and not nearly as bad as some other massacres, it really wasn't a massacre. I mean,
oh, well.
He explains everything away. You know, they were only Haitians. So, you know, it's not, you know, this wasn't a massacre of, like, white people. I mean, really, that's the unspoken language between the words that you get from this. Because these people weren't whites, they weren't quite on par with us. It really wasn't equivalent to what Germany did in Eastern Europe or whatever the case is. And again, you know, that's racism, if anything. And then, of course, America pursued Pancho Villa into Mexico, violated their sovereignty and their borders for a full year, just like we did with bin Laden. We invaded Afghanistan and pretty much blew up the entire place, what's left of it. You know, there's not that much infrastructure there anyway. But we blew up what was there to get this one man who didn't even do what he was alleged to have done.
Right.
And then Wilson sent a large U.S. force to Russia, interestingly enough, to fight against the Bolsheviks on the side of the white Russians in support of them and the Czech Legion of 70,000, which also included Slovaks. So this was a force of about 8,000 Americans, ended in absolute disaster and withdrawal. Nothing was achieved but needless agonizing death in the freezing cold winter. And, of course, the Bolsheviks won anyway. What's so crazy about this whole thing is, why were we fighting against the Bolsheviks? And then we became their ally. There is no the U.S. always does things purely out of, like, what might financially benefit them or what. There's no real loyalty there. I think with the fascist countries, you saw a little less practicality and more loyalty, especially between Germany and Italy, because actually the alliance with Mussolini brought far more harm to Hitler than good. And Hitler actually spared the Greeks their famine. He saved them from the famine that was going on there at his expense. The Germans actually spent their own gold to help the Greeks eliminate their famine and get back on track economically during World War II. And Robert Forson recently wrote about that on his blog. It's something like the day when Germany came to Greece's aid. And so here we see more than an alliance between these countries. Germany was extremely generous. You don't see that with the United States.
And you know, it's interesting that Wilson also sent, I think it was $10 million to the Bolsheviks in 1917. So it's kind of unusual.
That's very strange. But we see that we apparently backed Al-Qaeda, whatever that means, rebels against Gaddafi, while they're killing our men in Afghanistan and Iraq. So I guess we always support both sides.
Yeah.
And in that case, it must be purely for money.
Yes.
I don't see any other motive for backing and for countering and supporting yourself simultaneously. It doesn't make sense.
What Lenin said. He said, we'll back both sides.
Right.
So you don't control.
Yeah. You don't see that as much amongst other countries, at least not during the European War, World War II, and World War I. The U.S. invaded Nicaragua again to hunt down and kill Sandino, who, interestingly enough, was a Freemason. Apparently, they didn't accept him as a Freemason. The U.S. spent 5 years on this absurd mission between 1926 and 1933, and then the U.S. again went to war in China. Now, we had never left, but we were basically there with our little sphere in England's from 1901 to 1941. So we went to some long-standing war between 1901 and 1941 to protect American lives and property. So this was like an ongoing thing where we never left China, but we weren't always at war. It would be like a skirmish here, a little insurrection there that the Chinese were trying to dislodge us. So we shouldn't see this as like one continuous war, but more or less an occupation. Why were we over there in the first place? I mean, Boots going, well, what were we supposed to do? You know, we had to attack the Chinese because we were protecting our property. What were you doing occupying a sphere of China? Helping the Royal Navy push its opium through? I mean, that's why we were there in the first place. So we were carving out American occupation zones in that time period.
Well, Standard also had property over there because when Standard first went into China, they got a bunch of local agents to represent them, and then they bought a bunch of facilities, and all of a sudden the Chinese decided that they wanted to collect some sort of a tariff and that they did not want to be buying this kerosene from Standard Oil because they began to export kerosene to Asia by 1884. And so they had all this property. And then the Chinese were getting really darn sick and tired of the foreigners coming in and taking over that they just rebelled and decided that they wanted to impose a tax.
Yeah, and I'm sure there were other things too. I mean, there was the silk involvement, all kinds of reasons why the United States and Britain and a few other countries were interested in keeping like a constant occupation going of a certain sphere. Absolutely. And then we finally get to Smedley Butler, who Boot writes a lot about, talks about him. He spent his entire life as a loyal Marine, but only denounced war as a racket after he publicly disparaged Mussolini. I'm not sure what he said. And ran unsuccessfully in the Republican Senate primary in Pennsylvania in 1932. So everyone that goes, oh, Smedley Butler, he ratted out that evil Prescott Bush who was trying to overthrow Roosevelt with a fascist coup, blah, blah, blah. Okay, that, first of all, that really never got off the ground. It was kind of an idea that was pondered by some industrialists and banker types who were concerned that Roosevelt was taking the U.S. in a Marxist direction, and they had good reason to suspect that. The government was totally infiltrated with communists, as we know from The Haunted Wood. So I think Prescott Bush and some of the other people involved in that, the idea behind that coup, I think it was also Ford and a couple others, they had some legitimacy. But, of course, everyone goes, oh, Smedley Butler. Well, okay, he spent his whole life waging war and then denounced it after he became a retiree and didn't win. So he was willing to participate in the system. He was willing to, quote unquote, sell out. But when he didn't win, then he became a hero to all the, the kind of conspiracy types, what they called them, because he ratted out that evil Bush. I mean, it's silly.
Know, he did do some good things.
He did.
And in China, they burned one of the bridges down.
Mm-hmm.
He and his Marines rebuilt that bridge, and he became kind of a hero to the local Chinese people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that even early on, he may have seen what was going on. He joined the Marines when he was, I believe he was 16.
Right.
His mother allowed him to do it. And my grandfather was actually his aide in China the last time that they went. And I didn't meet my grandfather until I was 14. But, it was just a very interesting thing. They actually ended up writing a book together.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say he wasn't a bad man. Okay, I'm not saying he was a bad man. But what I am saying is, if we're going to go after Prescott Bush for being concerned about a potential Marxist communist government, no one knew FDR was going to die. We didn't know what was going to happen. In fact, the guy was pushing for another term beyond his two terms. So I can see why they were concerned. We can't automatically assume or feel that just because someone is a banker or whatever the case is, that everything they did was evil.
Right.
That would have been in America's interests to become National Socialist or to adopt more of that line. And we certainly didn't want to go communist. Whether FDR was really taking us in that direction, we don't know because he died. But for someone to say that there was no legitimacy behind Bush and then to champion this guy who outed him as a quote-unquote Nazi, it's just silly because Smedley Butler was also part of the system.
Sure.
He was a Marine who went and did the job of the government that the government told him to do. So it's selective heroes. We have our selective heroes. So that's all I'm saying with that.
Sure.
Yes, his behavior was exceptional. That much he definitely deserves credit for that. He wasn't.
And in France.
Right. He wasn't a raping, pillaging type.
Yeah. He went against his superiors in France and ordered extra blankets and extra stuff in 1917, 1918. So he was always for the common Marine rather than.
He was more or less a warrior and really joined it for that kind of warrior aspect, not so much to be an extension of the government. It's hammer, but unfortunately, when our people join the military, they are becoming the system. And so Smedley Butler is just as quote-unquote guilty as Prescott Bush and Henry Ford. Right. That's basically all I'm saying there.
Sure.
As far as Springborn, we're going to finish up with him real quick. He argues two main points. England, not Germany, is the ultimate liar and world pariah. And that the English and the Jews are essentially one and the same, religiously and culturally, due to the Old Testament, which is basically Talmudic, and Puritanism, which is also Talmudic. And basically what he says, what he argues, is that England became Jewry's force multiplier, that their power really didn't exist but through the Anglo-Saxon race. So that's an interesting problem that complicates the Jewish factor, because they can't do it without the Anglo-Saxons. They couldn't have done it without the Anglo-Saxons. So how do we go about allocating who's more responsible there for the world system in place, etc.? He mentions most of England's wars of aggression and crimes against humanity. He basically goes one by one through the list and then explains why England hates and attacks Germany no matter who's in charge. He says it didn't matter if it was the Kaiser or the Führer. We're evil. We're going to take over the world. These charges are just the same ones.
All righty. We do have to go to a three-minute break. We'll be right back with our guest today, Veronica Clark. Stay tuned.
Are skyrocketing prescription costs draining your budget? If you don't have insurance or are taking medication not covered by insurance, the Powerhouse Savings Card can lower your prescription costs by up to 50%. Now you and your family can save 20 to 50% on all prescriptions. It's accepted by most pharmacies and mail-order pharmacies nationwide. No prescription card is easier to use. Just show your card and save 20 to 50% right on the spot. There are no monthly fees. Just a one-time processing fee of only $4.95 for you and your immediate family. Stop paying full price for prescriptions. Stop going without the medication you need because it costs too much. Now your family can get the prescriptions they need at a cost you can afford. Call 1-800-963-0232 now and start saving money with the Powerhouse Savings Card. Call 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232.
Do you flinch when a police car appears in your rearview mirror or you get pulled over? Are you squeamish when an envelope arrives in the mail with a return address of a court, a government agency like the IRS, or some law firm? Would you like to escape government agency harassment? Then visit escapeharassment.com. George Bush allegedly says, "The government constitution is nothing but a doggone piece of paper." Well, that's a contract! A contract is an offer acceptance of that offer, at which point a contract arises by law and the offerer can no longer withdraw the offer. We teach, do not accept! That way there is no contract or agreement for you to go to their court or private club meeting. To escape government agency harassment like the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com. This is a tried and proven experienced process, not experimental, with a money-back guarantee that it works and success testimonials from previous students. Remember, escapeharassment.com. That's escapeharassment.com.
Introducing IXL Anti-Friction Metal Conditioner. IXL works at the molecular level to reduce friction by penetrating into and bonding onto the microscopic openings of the walls of ferrous-based metals. The surfaces become smoother and denser, and this reduces the heat, friction, and metal expansion and wear caused by moving metal surfaces. The benefits are reduced maintenance activities and cost, increased fuel efficiency, and prolonged equipment life. It will not clog pipes, injectors, or supply lines, does not build up or accumulate on itself as do many other additives. IXL does not contain moly, PTFE, or graphite. It also offers the tremendous benefit of being non-toxic. It is used for a friction reducer and performance enhancer in gas or diesel engines, transmissions, automatic or standard gearboxes, turbos, electric motors, outdrives, lathe, and cutting applications. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, then to our online store, or call us at 800-724-2719. That's 800-724-2719.
Back with our last segment with our guest today, Veronica Clark. She is the author of Werewolves of the Iron Cross, A New Look at Hitler's Armed Forces, came out in February this year, and Black Nazis, A Study of Racial Ambivalence in Nazi Germany's Military Establishment. And she is the translator and editor of Werewolves of the Iron Cross, The Hyenas of High Finance, and they're coming out with another book called The Union Jackal at the end of the year, perhaps. All right.
Okay, last point. Springborn exposes English racism and supremacy, as well as England's obsession with world domination and keeping Germany down at any cost in spite of England's rhetoric. So for some reason, even though the British and the Americans were world dominion, they did control the thing, they were supremacist in the most ultimate degree, it was Germany that was going to take over the world. Germany was the real threat. So we're seeing how a empire defends itself, how it defends its supremacy. That's basically what came out in that war in its propaganda against the Germans. For some reason, the Germans were a threat to this world domination.
That's amazing. I think it's because they were so skilled. They used their limited resources just really, really well. They were productive. They were a very good group of people. And I think that they were a threat to Britain. Not mm-hmm. that they would, you know, when they went into, for instance, the Ottoman Empire to build that railroad, the Baghdad mm-hmm. to Berlin Railroad, they were not doing it to exploit the people there, but to assist the people. And I think they just had a different mindset. And they weren't exploitive, and people were other countries were naturally going to want to deal with Germany over the people, like Britain, over the countries that were exploiting the resources rather mm-hmm. than helping develop them.
Right, and there's a book written by I believe it's Burton Klein. Yeah, Burton H. Klein. It's hard to get. It's a 1959. Harvard University Press book, Germany's Economic Preparations for War. It could possibly be on Scrib D, but this guy debunks the entire case that Hitler was basically sacrificing everything to get armed, that all the resources went to rearmament. He says that in reality, there was far less invested in rearmament in Germany than any of the other countries, including Britain.
And what's the name of his book?
It's called Germany's Economic Preparations for War.
All righty.
Burton H. Klein. And, you know, there's another study by an Alan Millward. It's in Aspects of the Third Reich. And this will be included a little bit in the Union Jackal about the Reichsmark block. Now, it wasn't actually an official block like the Sterling block was, but what he basically argues is that the nations in Eastern Europe, including Turkey, that participated in trade with Germany, which had all the cards stacked against it, benefited oftentimes more than Germany did, so there was no exploitation there in spite of the lies.
All righty. Amazing. Okay. We've run out of time.
As always.
Thank you so much for being on the program today. And
thank you for having me.
Take care of yourself.
I shall. Thank you.
All righty. Bye-bye. Bye-bye, listeners. Talk to you tomorrow.